Mr. Ballard, was the gist of your question to get some information on any sort of perception that we might have on what the reactions or actions or ramifications towards North Carolina would be? Was that pretty much what you're...
Yes.
In which case, then, let me turn to Matt Hull here and discuss, because I've asked him to take a look at the legal framework and legal ramifications, and I'm not sure what he's found, but maybe he can tell us what he thinks about all this. Mr. Hull.
Sure. So part of this is going to be a little bit repetitive of what Rob has gone through, just to discuss the legal framework for the regulation of COBIA in general, and then move on to what happens if we do not, or if we go out of compliance, or what could happen, rather. So first, the federal part of the fishery is regulated under the Magnuson-Stevens Act, and that act regulates, again, fisheries conducted in federal waters, which are those that range from 3 to 200 nautical miles from shore, in other words, the exclusive economic zone. The fisheries are regulated under fishery management plans that are developed by regional fishery management councils, and in this case, the South Atlantic Council, which, as has been noted, Virginia is not a part of, has implemented a fishery management plan for COBIA, and it applies to the stock of COBIA that ranges from Georgia to New York. They've done so pursuant to both a regulatory and a statutory authorization to regulate an individual stock of fish as a unit throughout its range. Under the statute, the fishery management plan is required to establish annual catch limits, which we've abbreviated here as ACL, at a level that ensures that overfishing does not occur, and the plan has to include accountability measures in the instance where ACL is exceeded. And as we've discussed here, the plan for COBIA sets the stock ACL at 690,000 pounds for 2015 and 670,000 pounds for 2016 and subsequent years. As Rob has noted, that did step down for I don't know if it's 2 or 3 years, but the step down has stopped now, and if it goes down any further, it will require some sort of regulatory change in the Code of Federal Regulations. If the stock ACL is exceeded, then that's when accountability measures are implemented, and the accountability measure that is provided for in regulation is shortening of the length of the season in federal waters only. And that is, the length is shortened to ensure that the harvest for the subsequent year achieves what's known as the annual catch target, which again is the 500,000 pounds for 2016 and subsequent years. But in any event, does not exceed the applicable ACL for the sector, which in 2016 is 620,000 pounds for the recreational fishery. So here the South Atlantic Council has determined that the season for COBIA in federal waters will need to end on June 20th to meet the ACT for 2016. But they don't obviously have control over what happens in state waters. However, the harvest in state waters is considered when determining whether the stock ACL has been exceeded. So if no sort of measures are taken in state waters, then it's likely that, again, ACL will be exceeded again in 2016. And if that happens, then the South Atlantic Council will again shorten the federal season or the season in federal waters for 2017, which, again, because of the shortening in 2016 failed, it will likely be shorter than 2016. In addition, the current level of harvest, as Rob has mentioned, constitutes overfishing, and if overfishing continues, that may lead the population to be classified as overfished. Obviously, that's a legal term of art and requires a specific declaration by a federal agency. But if that occurs, then the ACT and the ACL will be reduced by the sector-specific overage for the previous year, which means, if the 2016 harvest is as high as it was in 2015, that could essentially eliminate the ACL for, or not eliminate, but it sets the ACL to zero for the subsequent years. But again, that depends on the stock assessment and a declaration that it's overfished. In addition, if the federal efforts at controlling the overfishing fail, then it is possible the federal government will try to preempt the state's management measures. There is a mechanism for preemption, and that requires two findings. One, that fishing in the cobia fishery occurs predominantly in federal waters or beyond those waters, and the state has taken an action or has failed to take an action that results in a substantial adverse effect on the carrying out of the federal fishery management plan. No, Rob would have more information on this than I do, but I think a failure to take any action would probably result in a substantial adverse effect on the federal management plan, but the question would become whether the fishing in the fishery occurs predominantly in federal waters, and you know that would require essentially comparing the ratio of the catch in federal to state waters and making sure that the catch in federal waters as a coast-wide measure is substantially higher than the state. And that's, you know, something I don't really have the information for, but Rob may.
We have that information, and, okay. And that's the cobia are predominantly caught in state waters by a large percentage.
Okay. So that's the federal consequences or possible federal consequences. Then you also have the Atlantic States Marine Fisheries Commission, which I understand is taking a look at regulating cobia, but may not be able to get things in place for next year. If they do decide to take regulatory action, then the whatever measures they take will be binding on Virginia. And under federal law, they can direct whatever actions they deem appropriate. And obviously, if you know ACL continues to be exceeded by the extent that it was last year, then it would be possible that ASMMC will have to implement more strenuous control measures. So,
that clear?
Well, no. I mean, I guess it brought up a couple other things. The overfished status, as I understand it, cannot be declared without another stock assessment.
I believe that's correct.
Okay. So that doesn't play a factor until, like you said, 2019 maybe is what you're looking at?
The pressure still mounts. It may be 2018, but Dr. Duvall, last time we talked, said that it might be 2019.
Okay, so the overfish is not on the plate now?
No, there's going to be efforts to work on the overfishing, and one thing that Mr. Hull did mention, which we know about, and I think that some of the commission members know, it would take a year and a half, roughly, to do an amendment to take care of overfishing. In other words, the South Atlantic Council, this is their stock, their management stock, and through an amendment, this is just one of the things that we've heard, through an amendment, that could change the overfishing. What that means exactly, I'm not sure, but I know with tilefish, blue-line tilefish, we remember 2005 and 6, which this is strictly a federal waters, but we remember that Virginia was in a position to be sort of, you know, really clamped down on that particular species, and it took some pretty good efforts by former commission member Robbins and Jack Travelstead to some extent to ensure those amendments didn't end up doing that to us. And now we're at the Mid-Atlantic Council, sorry to talk about tilefish, but it's an example, and we're at a situation where 87,030 pounds is the ABC, the acceptable biological catch, and no one wants to be part of that, but they certainly don't want to be part of having the South Atlantic Council having complete autonomy. So, I mean, these things are difficult to predict, but you know, clearly the longer there's overfishing, the more things will heat up is what I think. And I had one more comment, Commissioner, for Mr. Ballard. you know, it was in relation to this situation in North Carolina, and I looked at what Dr. Duvall sent me, and she also indicated that she thought the commission had been very optimistic in what they thought this might do, that they didn't account for effort shifts, and they don't have a very good sampling program for the guide fishery, and that, you know, then she indicated, and she's going to be going to National Marine Fishery Service with their expectations, at least on the front end, on the input end, as well as the director of the South Atlantic Council. So it's a little bit more there.
Mrs. Cole.
Rob, since we're on the subject of what could happen if we were out of compliance, what do you feel maybe the feeling at ASMSC, if we were out of compliance on other fisheries issues such as menhaden reallocation or flounder issues, if we're out of compliance, is that going to affect their view of Virginia?
I think yes, but when you started asking me the question, I was more thinking of what staff has talked about, which is being out of compliance means that the commission, as I started this presentation off, has heard over 100 requests for compliance with the ASMFC. All different species, all different measures, and what happens, this is just a question we have, so what happens from here on out? If for COVIA, all of a sudden it's okay to be out of compliance, and we can argue about overfishing or just discuss about overfishing, certainly that sends a message in Virginia, which is the most important part of this. For the ASMFC, it would make the commissioner and I and Joe a little more guarded in what we're trying to do, because there would be skepticism, I think, is the best way to put it. We haven't really faced that in the ASMSC too much. We've certainly been the lone vote for certain items, the only state who voted for us. So it wouldn't affect that stance by other states. But some of these other measures, the sounding board we heard was, Connecticut and Massachusetts don't have any cobia now. Will they have cobia in 10 years? Is climate change going to affect something like that? I mean, but they're already thinking, we got to be careful about joint management. We don't like joint management. So the ASMFC is the best place for this issue for the long term. But the ASMSC is not exactly a walk in the park. There's a lot of, not every state wants something. If you have a stock where there's not overfishing, then what you're doing at the ASMSC is you're fighting over allocation. Now here we have a stock that probably will be declared by National Marine Fishery Service overfishing occurring, and we're going to be talking about allocation plans that we think 3 years, 43% is Virginia's fair share. And they'll say, well, how about 5 years? And they say, well, still look good in 5 years. We should get a good share. 10 years, still okay. But without that, that's why I say the ASMFC is best in the long term. We're going to make some ground with the South Atlantic Fishery Management Council. I can tell that. How much ground, I can't tell you. But the ASMFC is it has certain situations where, we may not do as well. I don't know. And the commissioner knows as well as I do.
It's a good question. Let me follow up on Glenn's question there with something that's a little bit pointed. In your experience, has the Atlantic States Marine Fisheries Commission ever shown mercy or tolerance to states that are out of compliance?
No, and I can think of, I can't get them all on the exact fisheries, but there's five cases. The most recent one is American eel. Delaware was out of compliance, and the chair at that time was the representative from Delaware. So that was a lot of fun there. They had to come into compliance.
As I recall, for the record, he actually voted to find his own state out of compliance.
Weak Fish was out of compliance in North Carolina back in 1995. They didn't establish the south of Hatteras closure. They eventually did. There is a difference. That commissioner brought something out that I had been thinking about. There's a difference between the ASMSC and what we're going through now. Mm-hmm. With the ASMSC, you can come back into the fold. In the ASMFC, they go through a process where the management board and then the policy board and then the full commission find you out of compliance. They send that recommendation of noncompliance to Commerce and also Interior. And Commerce comes back, Secretary of Commerce comes back and says, you're out of compliance. And what follows there is there's a period where they can come back in compliance. They come back into compliance. They all come back into compliance. Here we're faced with a situation where it's not a question that we can come back into compliance. You know, it's much different. So, you know, if we go out of compliance, we don't come back into compliance. We just wait and see what we do in 2016.
Mr. Zidra.
Two questions. One, on this regulation where it says recreational mandatory harvest reporting, I didn't see what time period you had to report in that regulation. Is that something that's on the form or what?
Well, yes. And this is new, so the thought has been after the season because we don't intend to be able to use this information in the season.
Okay. Second question. If we went with the June 20th closure as for keeping and just went to catch and release, how would that affect our catch analysis in this thing?
We don't have any prohibitions on catch and release. Even shad, which American shad, which has been under a moratorium, is still a popular catch and release in the Rappahannock, for example. So we don't have those built in. The federal government, the National Marine Fisheries Service, has such a measure for striped bass. But the mortality is about 5% for discard mortality. And that's low compared to most of the species that we're familiar with because you have a pretty good-sized animal, first of all.
So if we closed on the 20th to, I'm going to say, catch and keep and switched over to catch and release, you got a 5%, that would be a lot less non-compliance kind of issues.
It wouldn't be non-compliance at all because the only time you'll see it is different. You've picked on something that is different. Usually the annual catch limit contains harvest and dead discards. This annual catch limit is just harvest. The dead discards get rolled into the assessment, the assumption about the dead discards. When they do the stock assessment, the analytical approach, they will account for the dead discards, and then that will set the new ACLs and OFLs and ABCs and everything else. So, hit on something there.
We could close on the 20th as far as keeping.
Yes.
And then continue to catch and release.
Yes, sir.
Okay. Mr. Neal.
That's true of all our fisheries. All our fisheries that are closed season catch and release is legal.
Right.
That's just all the time. But I guess going back to what AJ was getting at, and I guess a little bit, Lynn, this ASMSC question really is kind of a non-factor. ASMSC doesn't cover cobia. They may in the future, but right now they don't, so we can't be out of compliance with ASMSC. So the question is what happens if we're out of compliance with SAFMC, which I guess technically we can't be out of compliance with them either since they're federal borders. But if we don't go along with them and we exceed the ACL, then what are the basically like red snappers being done now? And what happens? And so if, am I correct? The consequences of going over the ACL would be a shortening of federal season next year.
Or no season.
Well, okay, shortening it to all the way up to no season, which is basically what's happened with the red snapper.
Right.
All right. So that's, you know, and so that's the consequences if the ACL is exceeded. And at this point, We've had 2012, we weren't over. 2013, we weren't over. 2014, we weren't over. 2015, boom, we're way over. 2016, we're acting like we're going to be over if we don't do anything. But we don't know where that number is going to come in. If we do nothing along the whole coast, we could be at 2014 numbers, 2013 numbers, 2012 numbers. We just have that one-year spike. And so this automatic assumption that we're going to go over unless we shut down, I don't know where that assumption is coming from.
Well, I think yes, but I think since there was no ACL of really pinning us down and then having this 500,000-pound Georgia to New York ACT is really what's putting the problem on us. I mean, we got the ACL, we don't want to go over, but, you know, NIMS has already figured out with June 20th that is made for that purpose. They aren't figuring out any other variables. So, and that's with 2013, 14, and 15 data included, which, you know, forgive me, but, you know, I thought that was pretty well known that this isn't the whole June 20th is not based on 2015. It's based on 2013, 14, and 15. Right. And so we had some mediocre times there before 2015. And if I were better on this old, there we go, there's 2014, 214,000. 2013 was better than that. So that's in the average. That was a conscious decision by National Marine Fisheries Service. Two, I don't think they said to treat it like a spike, but they did say to the effect, you know, that's high, and the fishery can have variability, so let's use 3 years of data.
So, that was based on how they picked the June 20th date.
Yeah.
But the consequences in 2017 are only if 2016 goes over 620,000 pounds. So we have to have over that to have federal consequences.
Right. Mr. Erskine.
So I have a follow-up to my follow-up, I guess. North Carolina went out of compliance, and I'm now understanding that what we're talking about is a federal closure on the 20th of June. So majority of Cobia are counted in Virginia and state waters. I guess my question is the South Atlantic Council imposed through a fishery management plan the June 20th closure, and that was from Georgia to New York. How can we be out of compliance with South Atlantic Council and this fishery management plan if you close the federal fishery on the 20th, but we did not have a seat at the table with South Atlantic Council? I don't understand how they can impose a closure. Presumably in state waters what they would prefer, close the entire fishery June 20th, from Georgia to New York, when some of the Virginia and the northern states didn't have a seat at the table. I guess...
That's not a follow-up to your follow-up.
Well, pertinent to North Carolina, I assume they had a seat at the table.
Here's the situation. It is a federal waters closure. There's a letter in your evaluation from Dr. Roy Crabtree that is encouraging the states to close their state waters because in 2015, 82% of the total harvest was in state waters and 18% was in federal waters.
Yeah, I saw that, and I understand majority is in state waters.
So the South Atlantic Council nor NIMS can... The out of compliance is just that based on that June 20th closure, that there's a expectation, perhaps, and an encouragement for the states to do the same. If the states don't do the same, then we see what the effects of if not closing state waters are with our harvest, and we see what the effects of the current, which is going to be overfishing, whether that's compounded, and then we wait to see, as Mr. Hull suggested, can National Marine Fisheries Service determine that this is a federal waters predominant fishery? And I don't think they would have to do just, and this is my idea, that's all, I don't think they'd have to do just harvest, I think they'd have to say Georgia's ocean are federal waters, South Carolina's federal waters, North Carolina and Virginia are about a half. Out of four states, you've got 2.5 states who are federal waters. I mean, we don't know all the you know, permutations that can arise. But you know, I think your question is one that a lot of it, yes, it's accurate. I mean, no one is saying do it or else, but everyone knows if we don't, then can we take the consequences, which I think Mr. Ballard asked last meeting to one of our fishermen. Are you ready to take the consequences? And that, you know, that's where this has been the whole time. That's why I started out by saying, you know, we're in sort of an awkward position. We have a good fishery. Now, the one thing about not a seat at the table, as I said earlier, we've had a seat at the mackerel committee table, which in general, the way the committees work, what the committees do, they pass up to the full council. Rarely does the full council overturn a committee. So we've had a seat through the Mid-Atlantic Council. We've had a Virginian who has been that seat since at least 2006, if not a little earlier. However, Cobia have not been a newsflash until recently. And so things went along. You know, no one was really getting that involved. And then last October, it was pretty clear that things were going to happen. I think our anglers saw that things were going to happen.
Other questions from the commission?
I guess I got more discussions and stuff, so I think you ought to go to
Mr. Tankard.
I'm going to beat this question one more time. The ACT of 500,000 pounds, when I was reading that, I'm still confused as to how the heck they came up with that number. Can you tell us one more time how they've come up with ACT of 500,000 pounds?
When they set the ACL, they also set the ACT. The exact reason that they chose 500,000 pounds,
yes.
I can't tell you.
But everything, that is...
It's a buffer. It's a buffer. So think of it that way. What they're doing is they're saying, to give us some insurance here, we're going to go ahead, we've got this annual catch target, and we're going to set it lower than the ACL. It's a little different than other councils in that it is the council, well, I can tell you this much, it's the council itself. The South Atlantic Council set that ACT. In the Mid-Atlantic Council, it's something called a monitoring committee because the ACT, the annual catch target, is supposed to consider management uncertainty, whereas the ACL is based on scientific uncertainty. And that comes from the Scientific and Statistical Committee. So it's a little bit different structure in the South Atlantic Council, but it's the same idea that there's a buffer there because of management uncertainty.
Okay. Are there other questions?
Let me just follow up that.
Mr. Cedar.
But above that is this biological number.
Right.
And where do they get those figures from?
That's the stock assessment. So when they do the stock assessment, they produce the overfishing limit, the OFL, which has a relationship to maximum sustainable yield. And then it's the Scientific and Statistical Committee, through Magnuson-Stevens reauthorization, that sets the acceptable biological catch. And then the fisheries are below that with the ACL and the ACT. It's, you know, this is... not exactly new, but it seems to me the Mid-Atlantic Council started this in 2009, where the South Atlantic Council didn't start this until 2012. So.
Other questions from the commission? No one looks happy. Thank you, Chief. All right, I'm going to open up the public comment period. One second. I'll reiterate my call, my request here that everyone behave civilly, like Virginia gentlemen and gentlewomen, gentle ladies. And try not to be redundant from or too redundant from what other people have already testified to. I guess I'll make a request here. I think it's all very tempting to jump into a long discussion and disputation about numbers, and I'll certainly give you the right to do that, but I guess I'll caution that there's nothing that this commission can do about the numbers that have been created and presented and that will continue to be used. I personally think that it's going down a rabbit hole if we argue about the numbers that they're using when we can't change them. We all know what they are. I don't think anybody likes them. As a matter of fact, I'd be willing to bet money that nobody here likes them. So I just throw that out here for your consideration when giving your public testimony. So would you raise your hands if you want to testify? That's kind of manageable here. Sure, no one else does? You will when the time comes. Captain, you come first, if you would, please. Just state your name for the record and speak into the microphone.
Thank you, sir. And my name is Bob Reed. I'm from Reedville. And I appreciate this opportunity. And Mr. O'Reilly, Rob O'Reilly has told us essentially what we cannot do. Now I want to say a little bit about what I think we need to do, and we need to have a cobia, open cobia season. I want to commend the VMRC on establishing a reporting system for cobia. We absolutely need a reporting system for cobia and striped bass. I'm a charter boat captain in the Northern Neck and fish, and I'm a fishaholic. Charter boating, recreational fishing traditionally has been wonderful, economically viable, and a great source of revenue for the state of Virginia with the influx of tourism from all over the world, including my customers that come from Moscow. Since I moved here to Northern Neck over 11 years ago, things have changed dramatically. We used to have an abundance of gray trout, croaker, spot, flounder, etc. But changes in the environment and non-responsive fisheries management by VMRC has changed all of that. Let me explain. Our bread and butter croaker and spot fisheries have gone by the wayside, mainly because of a lack of a fisheries management plan for these important fish to the Northern Neck and to the Chesapeake Bay. Even though ASMFC tells us they are abundant, and I believe them, in the Atlantic Ocean, they are certainly not abundant in our waters. Because our big draw, rockfish, has been deprived to us because we are not allowed to harvest stripers all summer from mid-June until October. And then came the cobia. Yes, we were happy to see a tremendous arrival of cobia into our area 2 years ago. We were happy, our customers were happy, and I'm sure Richmond was happy to see an increase in revenues from recreational fishing dollars and tourism as a result. Yes, we captured a lot of cobia. The commission, however, did absolutely nothing to better manage our catch. And I know that's been stated earlier, and we wonder about that. Maryland boats got wind of the fishery, moving down their documented boats from to the Reedville area and taking 10 to 20 fish per boat, more than the three per fish that's been reported. I have pictures of that. Now we are faced with a total summer closure. I and the recreational fishermen are in favor of sustaining this fishery through better management. Boat limits could be established, size limits could be adjusted, fishing days could be set up. A lot of action could be taken to manage cobia, but to absolutely shut down in the middle of June when they are just getting here will be disastrous. We don't have, our charter boat people and our recreational customers are having to get on a boat in Reedville and go into the Potomac River or into Maryland to catch stripers in the summertime. And now we got a few other fish, cobia. Please consider other alternatives so we can continue with our livelihood and service our customers and promote increased tourism and revenue to our beautiful state. And again, I think the reporting system is an excellent thing, and that we need to push for stock assessment and look at our recreational fishing fund, which is very abundant, to pay for this. I'm sick and tired of hearing we don't have the money, we can't do it. The stock assessment would have eliminated all of these problems. Thank you.
Questions for Mr. Reed?
Well, are you taking over?
Well, I have no choice.
No. Unless you want to volunteer.
She's close to the center. You're in my way.
Thank you, Mr. Reed.
Thank you, Bob. Thank you.
Thank you.
Yes, sir.
If you all will indulge me, first I'd like to ask if one of the VMRC staff could backflip the slides to the numbers that showed the 2014 ACL and the 2015.
State your name for the record.
I'm sorry. John. My name is Jonathan French. I'm a recreational fisherman.
I'll help.
Thank you.
Also, what he's looking for, and I heard a letter from Rob Whitman referenced a bunch of times. I received it. I'm hopeful you all received it. A letter from May 19, 2016 from Congressman Whitman, Congressman Randy Forbes, and Congressman Riggle. Is that
we have
in your all's material?
Yes.
So I'm okay with referencing it. I just didn't want to quote somebody unless you all had received the material. I'm not going to talk a whole lot about the data. I think there's other people who will. But I do want to note that we're here today because South Atlantic played a game of regulatory chess that made these numbers sound a little different than they actually are. And I wanted to give you some context that wasn't part of Mr. O'Reilly's presentation. First, he did mention that Florida was carved out of the management zone. I want to talk about that very briefly. As you can see here on this line, the ACL was just under 1.5 million pounds through 2014. Florida was carved out. Florida received about 880,000 pounds of that almost 1.5 million quota, and I'm just talking about East Florida, Key West to the Georgia-Florida state line, which is more than all the other states caught. I'm sorry, all the other states received. That's important because that same zone only caught 330,000 pounds of fish. So, again, when these numbers are calculated, yes, we would have exceeded the ACL under the old numbers, but I actually think that number is a little closer to around 450,000 pounds that we would have gone over, again, assuming that you believe the data is accurate. Now, that's important. I want to come to the zone split because the justification for the zone split was based on National Standard 2 in the MSA, which requires NOAA and South Atlantic to use the best science available. And in the fisheries management plan, they said that the best science available indicated that panelists determined that the biological boundary which means two separate stocks that are, have some kind of biological difference between the Gulf and Atlantic migratory groups to be at the Florida-Georgia border. This decision was based on genetics and tagging data and recommendations from the Commercial and Recreational Statistics Working Group. This concerned us because when you read the Fisheries Management Plan, VMIS's data was not referred to at all. It was cited that it had been submitted, but it was not referred to. Their tagging data was submitted. Aaron Kelly, a charter boat captain who's been very active in the tagging program down in North Carolina, none of his data was featured in that. And so we did some digging, and Billy Gorm's here, and I'm sure he'll speak in a minute, but he found a study published the same year the stock assessment came out from Texas A&M that was authored actually to see about the viability of aquaculture that determined that, and I quote, cobia that were sampled from waters of Virginia, Mississippi, and Louisiana were genetically homogeneous. That means same fish, genetically the same across the management zone, based on assays of microsatellite genotypes and mDNA haplotypes. This finding is consistent with observed migration patterns and tag and release studies of cobia that show that cobia primarily winter off the Florida Keys and go seasonally from the Gulf and the Atlantic and back and forth. And plenty of Virginia fish have been caught in the Gulf, and plenty of Gulf fish have been caught in Virginia. So the fundamental reason why this zone split occurred and why suddenly we went down to that green line was because NOAA ignored the best science available. If you want to question it, it was published in the National Journal of Aquaculture. It's a peer-reviewed, scientifically accepted study. And until May 9th, NOAA didn't know anything about it. We didn't. We mentioned it at the May 9th meeting, and Mr. Greg Waugh, who's been held up as a bastion of honesty, suddenly backtracked and said, oh, well, there wasn't any biological difference, even though that's what it says in the Fisheries Management Plan, that those fish just grew at a slightly different rate between both zones. So when you look at all the people in this room who are going to lose their livelihood, the reason for that being because fish slightly grow at a different pace in two management zones doesn't really cut the mustard. But let's continue down that path. Second, so in essence, that triggered an ACL change. Federal rules are that they use a three-year average to determine a closure, unless it's the year after a change in the ACL. So at that same time, the ACL changed. That's why we're here having this discussion about a one-year closure. If the ACL split doesn't happen, use the average from 2013, 2014, 2015, we're under the ACL. We're not here having this conversation today. Second, Mr. O'Reilly stated it earlier, a National Standard 4 talks about that there needs to be an equitable distribution of the resource. I think you all can do the math. Florida's not catching as many fish. They still have a two fish per person limit. That hasn't changed. They're not catching as many fish, yet they receive 66% of the quota. Virginia, of course, is getting the screws put to them, as was northern North Carolina. It's important to note when we discuss representation, I would have asked NOAA repeatedly, who is the person on the Mid-Atlantic Council that was our proxy on the mackerel committee, and where is it that they speak on the record on our behalf? I've not received that back. I challenged somebody to produce who this mystery person was, and there was only one person. And as Mr. O'Reilly noted, there are three voting members on the overall South Atlantic Committee from each state, including Florida, which is no longer managed in this plan. So let's break that down for a minute. Florida has three votes. They're not negatively impacted by the closure. And again, this is the creation of the regulatory levers, not the data, the decision to have an ACL split and the decision to have a end-of-season closure, the accountability measure. Those were decided by people. Florida voted, they don't have a stake in it. Georgia voted, they didn't have an issue with a June 20th closure because, as Mr. O'Reilly noted, most of their fish are caught in federal waters, but they're caught early in the year. South Carolina, who I want to come back to, doesn't really have an late-season fishery. They're not impacted by a June 20th closure until, of course, they passed this most recent law. And, again, I want to address that. North Carolina, south of Cape Hatteras, doesn't have a late-season cobia fishery. They're fine. From Cape Hatteras northward, there was no representation on the South Atlantic Committee either. So Virginia wasn't represented. Northern North Carolina wasn't represented. Look at who got hurt. Again, National Standard 4 says an equitable distribution of the resource and that no other entity acquires an excessive share of such a privilege. Again, look at Florida's numbers. So how on earth did South Atlantic come up with these conclusions and take these steps when the federal law says very clearly what they need to do? Well, I wanted to come back to South Carolina because in 2009, December 2009, Mr. Robert Broyles, who's also on the Atlantic States Fisheries Council now, called for the entire South Atlantic to adopt a spawning closure for cobia and a reduction of the Atlantic ACT and a zone split. It's on the record. It's in the letter. I've provided my public comments that are in your written materials. He's on the record asking for it, as well as other folks from South Carolina. That's the exact same thing they passed in legislative session this year. That proposal was made well before any of this data, any of these overages. As you can see, we were way under going back 2009, the year it was proposed, we were way under. We had one spike in 2010. All right. In 2010, Greg Waugh is on the record saying an ACL reduction will happen and that a zone split will happen 3.5 years before any data is available. And then very conveniently, suddenly the 1 year after an ACL is changed, the 1 year where a 1 year spike could cause a closure, magically it happens. And that's why people are calling into question the MRIP data. And Congress agrees with me in the letter that I didn't hear it mentioned today. Congressman Whitman, Congressman Riggle, and Congressman Forbes said, compliance with the closure and a subsequent reduction in current creel limits validates NOAA's fisheries and South Atlantic Marine Fisheries Council's disregard for federal law. That's members of Congress. The House of Representatives has passed an MSA reauthorization. The Senate Commerce Committee is considering it, and I'm hopeful that a decision not to comply today will bridge us to the point where these rules are changed, and South Atlantic can't be so arbitrary with their decisions to violate the rules that they already operate under. You've asked again about boat limits and things of that nature. I'm here calling for noncompliance and retention of a one fish limit. I would be comfortable to a size of total length increase to 40 inches because that's equal to what North Carolina passed. North Carolina uses a fork limit and they use 37, so 40 total length should be the same. I am opposed to the boat limit only because it validates South Atlantic's methodologies for coming up with this policy. If the commission wants to have a conversation about whether more conservation is needed, that's an appropriate conversation, but it shouldn't be done with a gun to our head where we're being extorted with the threat of a closure. And finally, with regards to the gaff, just as in my limited cobia fishing experience, I love to do it. I'm not very good at it. And I know a lot of the folks in the room would love to have me as a potential customer, so me not fishing hurts them. I would say that in terms of safety, I feel much safer gaffing a large fish than I do netting it. So as long as it's keeper fish, I've got no problem with retention of the use of a gaff. I'm happy to answer any questions, and I have a lot more detail, including citations of all the material I quoted in the public comment letter that I issued.
Any questions from the commission, Mr. Erskine?
Yes, sir.
You you discussed, you know, the seats and the representation at South Atlantic Council, and I'm just curious if you attended those public meetings and provided these comments.
I've provided these comments from the March 19th meeting beforehand. As Commissioner Bull and Mr. O'Reilly said, this was not on any of our radar. Again, that's my own fault as a citizen. I need to be a little more attentive as someone who enjoys the fishery, but I don't have a financial stake in it. I do think it's a little unfair that a charter fisherman who has a 14-hour day responsibility, it's one thing to be aware of the rules you've got to follow. It's another thing to be an expert on federal regulatory compliance in order to do your job okay. And I will say, I'm a nationally recognized expert on federal regulations in the healthcare space. And to navigate all this, I work with CMS on a daily basis. This is so much where I have newfound appreciation for CMS because they were much more transparent. It was much easier to find information. And generally speaking, their conduct of public meetings and their responsiveness to public comment was much, much more impressive than what I've seen from South Atlantic so far. I have been dismayed at their behavior in public meetings, particularly the May 9th meeting. I understand that the crowd was a little rowdy, but, you know, those folks' livelihoods, you know, at risk, they're going to be a little upset. You as the head of the council should show a little bit better decorum than what they displayed.
Other questions from the commission? Thank you, Mr. French.
And, greatly appreciate it.
And welcome to our world.
Thank you.
Captain Avery. Please identify yourself for the record, Mike.
I'm Mike Avery. I'm the current president of the Virginia Saltwater Sport Fishing Association. I'm also a charter boat captain, and I still like to fish recreational with my friends. I wholeheartedly concur with the message Jonathan French has given you guys. We've been working with him and his coalition of charter captains and other recreational anglers since this issue came about, and he's and his merry band of anglers have dove deeply into this issue, and I can't find anything that he's just told you is incorrect. Our position within VISA is that we don't comply with the closure, and we keep our state waters open at 37 inches, one per angler, and no closure. And I'm gonna tell you why. First of all, I think that, as Jonathan said, we were all kind of asleep at the wheel. I blame our anglers. I blame the staff here. I blame us all. We're all kind of equally at fault for being asleep at the wheel while the South Atlantic Council put these measures in place that led us to where we are here today. I think if we all had our head in the game when this was happening, we would all have foreseen this, and we would have raised our hands and said, wait a minute, we can't do that, and here's the reason. The accountability measures that are being put in place with the automatic triggers are just wholly unfair for Virginia. That the fact that we got here with just the one-year spike that we've talked about, and we didn't use a three-year average, 1 year is a spike, and then we're facing a closure is totally unfair to Virginia. Jonathan talked about the zone split. I was appalled at diving into the zone split and how Florida got their own quota, which is larger than the rest of the coast combined. That is totally unfair to Virginia. I'm not necessarily going to challenge the MRIP data, but I do want to talk about the PSE for just a second, the proportional standard error. And Chief O'Reilly, he can correct me if I'm wrong here. The PSE, he mentioned, was 39 for the number of pounds, but when you combine that with the number of trips, the PSE is 44. That's a rather large PSE. That means even by NOAA's own rules, once you have 50% PSE, they question the data that comes with it. 44% is pretty close to 50. That's a coin toss. And so are you really willing to close our fishery down in Virginia waters over a coin toss? That maybe it's right and maybe it's wrong after you flip the coin. The closure of 20 June, we've talked about that. It should have been done in a rolling manner, giving each state, as these fish migrate from south to north, each state should have gotten a shot. They didn't do that. They just, June 20, let's make it easy. Let's just close everyone down right when our fishing gets good here. And, yes, we started to catch some cobia, but it's just the beginning. And this whole weekend, we've had like 4 days worth of rain. And so other than Ken Neal out there fishing in the rain, there not many people were out there. So with that, my recommendation to the commission is that you vote to not comply, keep our season open. And if you can't accept that recommendation, I would ask that the commission do what North Carolina did. Try to be creative. Try to come up with some sort of alternative to keep our season open. Don't just close us down. That is totally unfair, and for all the reasons stated. Quickly on the gaff, I think you're addressing a problem that doesn't exist. I keep a net and a gaff on the boat, as most cobia fishermen do. And you can clearly see any fish that's even questionable in size, we net. We only gaff the fish that we know is legal size and that we plan to keep. So that the whole gaff and no gaff is addressing a problem that doesn't exist. We think we should keep the gaff. We can get the fish in the boat quicker, easier, more efficiently, and it's a fish we're going to keep anyways. So I suggest we keep the gaff. And, oh, by the way, we still have some policies on gaffing versus spear fishermen. The fact that we cannot gaff a striped bass, but a spear fisherman can shoot them underwater, and the spear fisherman has no better way to measure if that's a legal fish or not than coming alongside the boat. So let's keep the gaff. Let's not even consider that. Any questions?
Mr. Ballard.
Yes, sir.
I take it you're opposed to a boat limit, but if we were to look into that, what do you think a reasonable number would be?
I am opposed to boat limits, but if it's come down to boat limits or closure, I'd rather see the boat limits. And with that, I could support the FMAC recommendation and the Peninsula Saltwater Sport Fishing Association. That three boat limit, and one of those three over 50 inches. I could support that recommendation. I personally don't like sector separation between charters and wrecks. I really don't like that. But I would, defer to some others. If you guys enter into that discussion, I think that's if that helps keep the season open, I think we ought to have that discussion too.
Other questions?
Thank you.
Thank you, Captain. Who's next? Mr. Deem, I saw your hand first.
Thank you, Mr. Commissioner. I appreciate the opportunity. I'm Jeff Deem, Chair of the FMAC Committee. And speaking of FMAC, let me go back and just quickly explain what Rob pointed out. We did waive the Robert's rules, not that we're real strong on them to start with, but we had a lot of great people in the audience as you do today, and we wanted everybody to have a chance to talk. And the input that we got from the audience on this issue, the detail that they went into in the research was phenomenal. Nothing like we'd ever seen before. So everybody should have had a chance to talk, and we tried as best we could. We did stop with one set of recommendations for you because we could have gone all night and had 35 different sets, and we didn't know what options we were going to have with working with the other states, what options we were going to get from the South Atlantic Council. Rob was expecting a little bit of mitigation on our part. So we ended it at that point, but there's some great people out here behind me, and they went to an extraordinary length to try to make this as fair as possible. First, I can appreciate to a point. I had the honor of representing Virginia on the Mid-Atlantic Council two terms, so I can appreciate where the South Atlantic Council is coming from. They're legally sworn to protect the resource first, and the people that rely on it is a very close second. And that's the way it should be. None of us have the right to wipe out any species. So with that being said, and knowing that the courts have ruled that National Standard 1, which says protect the resource, overrides everything else. So that's, in most cases, or in some cases, all that they can consider. I don't believe this is one of those situations. Amendment 20B, under which this closure is applied, ignores National Standards 4 and 8, which you'll hear again from time to time, but it ignores them in a fishery that is not in immediate danger. It's believed that it's not overfished, and it's believed, if you believe the science, and if you go along with this coastwide split, it's believed that they may be experiencing overfishing. Now, the regulation discriminates between members of different states. That's National Standard 4. It doesn't take into account the importance of the fishery resource to communities as National Standard 8. And leaving those two out, if you just strictly go by the law, it should never have been submitted by the South Atlantic Council, and it should never have been accepted by the regional director the way it was written. If foreign aid have any application at all, and on the council I was on, there were times when you had to stop at National Standard 1. But if they're even worth having, this is where they should be applied. We're not overfished and may be experiencing overfishing. And that brings me to, well, I'm going to skip ahead a minute here. I looked at the rule as written in the final rule, and I don't see where it says that because of overfishing, you can employ the accountability measures. It says, on every paragraph I found it, it says the fishery has to be overfished before you can apply the accountability measures. Maybe your attorney can point out something else to me. Maybe Rob can point it out. And it also says that it has to be notified. It has to be announced first in what they call the status of the U.S. Fisheries Report to Congress. Well, the latest one does not say anything about that stock being overfished. It does say that there's only two stocks, the Gulf Coast stock and the East Coast stock. And I would imagine that the idea that you have to announce that first is there as a buffer so that people can adjust and aren't caught blindsided like we were with this closure. Now, I'm sorry, I'm going to read through all my notes here so I don't miss anything. I believe that South Atlantic Council has the authority to mitigate this damage if they wish to. In the final rule, it says the accountability measure states that it must reduce the length of the following fishing season by the amount necessary to ensure landings may achieve the applicable Act, ACT, annual catch target, but do not exceed the accountable fish target. It does not say that it has to be a coastwide season that's shortened or that the length of the seasons may not be adjusted on a state-by-state basis. You'd have to be a little creative and really want to find an answer to go to the length that we would like to have seen. But it doesn't, in my opinion, doesn't say they are legally restricted from doing that. And also, Section 622.389, and I admire anybody that can go through this stuff, of the final rule states that the regional administrator may establish or modify, and the applicable council is required to approve, unquote, any number from a list of changes that the regional administrator can make. Those include changes to seasons, bag limits, ABCs, ACLs, ACTs, and it does not limit those actions to the current season. Any season, current or future, he can make those changes to. So if they wanted to work with us, and I'm saying this because we've done a lot for the other states, and we've always been agreeable or amenable to working with other states, if they wanted to work with us, they have an avenue to do that. I can leave a copy of the Federal Register with you if you want to see it yourselves. I have no problem with that. Now, back to Virginia, the pressure does appear to be increasing. I can't deny that, and I think this is a pretty good sign that that's true. And we have to take steps to watch it and make sure that we don't take more than our fair share of whatever is accounted or allocated to the fishery. But Virginia has set the standard for that, and we did it years ago. Nobody else is doing what we've done. And I was there when we did that. We did it out of precaution. We did it with the support of the fishing community. And everybody else who fishes, every other state that Cobia visits, has benefited from our sacrifices. At this point, and I had the cast a deciding vote at the Mid-Atlantic Council, I mean the Fisheries Management Committee meeting. If they try to, we should go out of compliance or stick with a different season in Virginia waters. If they want to fight us in 17, they can fight us in 17. Hopefully, before that happens, the ASMFC will take over this fishery, which will give us a lot better representation and a definite, I think, state-by-state split of the allocation, which is the way it should be. Just as importantly, the National Academy of Sciences is reviewing the MRIP process. I don't know if it's been peer-reviewed before now. I certainly hope it hasn't, because if peer-reviewed science gives us something like MRIP, then I've lost all faith in peer-reviewed. But the National Academy of Sciences is reviewing it. They will have a decision or a report by the middle of this December, which means I'm trying to avoid going into MRIP numbers as the commissioner wanted.
Jeff, you can if you want to. It's just, well, I'm not sure it gets us anywhere.
There's two examples that that cast real doubt on the fishery. In the ASMFC presentation in Alexandria a couple weeks ago, there was a peer review of the study on gray sea trout. The peer reviewers had questions about the MRIP catchability factor that was used in that assessment. They didn't think it was right that it overestimated landings. And in the gray trout issue, that didn't make much difference because that's severely depleted already. In a fishery that's healthy like the cobia fishery, that can be a really big difference. And just two real quick experiences. 2013 to 2014, the cobia fishery effort went up 0.01%. The weight of the fish went up 0.05%, but MRIP stated that the average landings dropped by 39%. From 2014 to 2015, the effort went up 25%, the average weight went up 19%, the success rate went up 2%, and MRIP estimated that the landings tripled, nearly tripled. That's the best available science. And at some point, if national standards 4 and 8 aren't going to be used, take them out of the plan. If they're going to be used, this is the place to use it. The fishery isn't in immediate danger. Let's do right by these people. I fish out of Watch Prig. I don't see many cobia. My recommendation is that you listen to these experts behind me who have more experience and know more about this fish than I ever will, and consider them. Just keep us in mind. We still want to be able to catch a few up the coast, but they can give you the best advice. Any questions?
Thank you, Mr. Deeb. Questions from the commission? Thank you, sir. Thank you for your service. First hand? I see Beth.
Hi, my name is Beth Sinowick. I'm a recreational angler, and I support the noncompliance, which is probably everyone's looking at me like they know I cross my T's and dot my I's, so that's probably odd coming from me, but I really feel that I'm not going to get into the data thing because we all agree that there's just a lot of mishap stuff there. But I just really think that we should have had better representation, and we didn't, and that does make a difference. In December of 2015, FMAC voted on a mandatory reporting for cobia. When concern came up, I was really hoping that would have been implemented for 2016 because it would have given us more data than we have. And I'm not really clear why that was delayed. So it's unfortunate because that, even if we do end up having a short season, which I hope that we don't, it's unfortunate that we could have had that implemented and in place because that was passed. I completely agree with much of the information that Jonathan French has so kindly taken his time to research and implement and come to FMAC meetings and talk to people, because there was so much information on the cobia. I honestly, when I served on the FMAC committee, I spent six solid months, and it became a full-time job. So I'm not going to bore people with all the facts because there's been a lot of facts, and I just say that I agree with the noncompliance. I personally think that the regulations that are in place right now should remain until we find some solid data. That's just a personal opinion of mine. I'm not representing anybody but myself right now. And I personally net cobia. I know a lot of people that gaff cobia. I'm not real good on the gaff. I don't have a lot of experience with it, and a lot of people don't know that about me. But I would rather net a fish, but I completely understand why a charter captain would want to gaff a fish. But I choose not to. So I don't have anything else to say other than that. So thank you for letting me speak.
Thank you. Any questions from the commission? Thank you, Beth. Another hand? I see George.
My name's George Head. I live in Yorktown. I hate going after all these smart people. I'm not nearly as well-spoken as them, but I'll do my best. I'm going to refer to my chicken scratch notes here, so bear with me. I'm a recreational fisherman in Virginia ever since I was young, and I've been charter captain for the last 7 or 8 years. I've been targeting cobia for long time, 25 years or so, and I think I was one of the first charter captains in Virginia to start targeting cobia as our primary target 7 or 8 years ago. I have a lot invested in this fishery. In December, I bought a new boat. It's the largest investment my family's ever made, other than our home. And I'm counting on the cobia charters this summer to help pay the expenses of my business. Without them, I'm not sure what we're going to do. I have a great respect and passion for the cobia fishery. I'm an advocate for conservation, research, and reasonable regulations to ensure the future of this fishery. I feel like a year ago there was not a single mention of cobia being overfished. As a matter of fact, 4 months ago, there was not a single mention of cobia being an overfished species. And all of a sudden in February, when we're preparing for the upcoming season, we're blindsided with a possible closure for the majority of our season. I question Rob O'Reilly saying that it's very clear that these fish are being overfished. And, you know, why wasn't something done proactively if it was so clear in Virginia and North Carolina? We've allowed Virginia to continue to catch two fish per angler and Virginia to catch one per angler up until this year. I think Rob even referred to there was some suggestions or proposals about possibly doing something, being proactive, boat limits. And nothing was done about that until all of a sudden 3 months ago we're looking at a closure. At the time we were notified that there was a possible closure, I immediately started researching all of the available data, talking to Rob and Ryan. I contacted one of the MRIP biologists and asked a lot of questions, Lewis Gillingham. And I was asking as many questions and researching as much data as I could, looking at everything available. And the bottom line is, it seemed like everybody was confused. Lewis told me these are a very difficult fish to get accurate data on. The MRIP biologist, nobody could tell me where they're getting the numbers from. I asked about the stock assessment. Why did Florida get a larger proportion than all the rest of the states? No good answer. Why did the average weight all of a sudden last year in 2015 take a big jump from 2014? No good answer. The MRIP biologist even said, we only carry scales that go up to 12.5 kilograms. We're not weighing these fish. He didn't know how they were coming up with the average weight, which is all factored into this this huge spike that we saw last year. The directed trips, Rob repeatedly, I asked a lot of questions about that, and everybody was telling me those were boat trips. And now all of a sudden, Friday's statement that came out from VMRC, that's changed to angler trips. So my point is that it seems like everybody is confused on where this data is coming from. The data is very troubling, this huge spike that we're looking at last year. And it just seems there's so many variables and so much that's unknown about this fishery. And, you know, based on that, in closing, I feel like from my observations out there on the water all summer that we're dealing with a healthy fishery. I haven't seen much change. If anything, I feel like we're seeing more fish the last few years than we were seeing 7 or 8 years ago. I think that's the reason we're maybe looking at higher numbers. But there are a lot of fish around. I'm all for regulating them. We have seen an increase in pressure the last few years with this site fishery that has developed in Virginia. And I want to protect the fishery for the future. But I ask you to please make your decision for this year based on what's right for the Virginia recreational fishing community and our cobia fishery. Please don't take away a valuable public resource based on pressure from federal agencies that have very troubling data that I think a lot of us would agree is poor quality data. And instead, please vote with reason and common sense and institute a reasonable regulations that can allow us to continue our cobia fishery after the June 20th closure. I thank you for your time and consideration. I know you guys are kind of caught in the middle and in a tough spot. As far as the gaff issue, we net most of our fish these days. I think it's a viable option if it would help in any way. It does take a special net to net 50-plus pound fish, but it definitely can be done if that would help in our calls. So any questions?
Yeah.
Any questions from the commission? Yeah. Mr. Neal.
George, how many years have you won the Cobia Conservation Award?
As far as I know, they only gave that 1 year, and they gave it to me.
Any idea of how many cobia you've tagged and released?
We are tagging about 100, in an average of about 100 a year for the last several years, 400 or 500 in the last few years.
Are you still, will be collecting genetic samples for VIMS?
We will.
Lewis and Susanna, is she still out there?
Yeah.
We still give an award for the most tagged cobia every year, do we not?
Yeah.
Okay, and George has won that, how many? Okay. All right. So I guess my point is this person is probably as big on cobia conservation as anybody I know in anywhere. All right. So that's the point I was making. Thank you, George.
And one other point I would like to make is Rob is saying again that it's so clear that these fish are being overfished. I think this same Marine Resource Commission within the last year or so has voted to allow the commercial hook and line fishermen to keep 6 cobia per day when the federal guidelines is 2. I think it was 2 in Virginia. All of a sudden, this sight fishing developed, and the commercial guys wanted to keep more than 2 per cardholder, and this same commission voted to allow them to keep 6. And they are going to be able to continue to commercial fish cobia this summer. And if they close down the recreational fishing on the 20th, the commercial guys will be able to continue fishing and keep their 6 per day, which this same commission voted on within the last year or so.
I've got a question.
Mr. Cedra.
If we were to pass some limits like boat limits, what would your answer be?
I would support long-term the 3 fish boat limit. For this year to get us through, and I know this might not be popular, but I would take almost anything as opposed to a closure 2 fish. I'd even consider, I'd take 1 fish per boat over a closure. Anything to avoid the closure, but I think three is reasonable. There are a lot of boats coming in on a consistent basis with more than three fish. I can tell you that. So it would help the fishery.
How about limit, the size limit?
Again, it goes to the male and female thing. I think if you go too high, you run into the problem of harvesting mainly females. But I have no problem increasing it 2 or 3 inches, 39, 40 inches. I don't think would be an issue. And I like the one fish over 50 inches. I think we need to release some of the larger breeding females back into the stock, and I think that's a good suggestion as well.
Mr. Packard.
So how many fish do you usually catch in a year? You got any sense of that? How many are you keeping? How many throw them back? You got any sense of that?
We're probably fishing 50 or so trips, 60, 50 trips, and catching in the ballpark of 300, averaging 5 or 6 a day, something like that.
Mr. Erskine.
In your experience, what's the spawning season for cobia?
I don't really know. We see fish out there throughout the summer that appear to me to be spawning, a big fish kind of doing circles with smaller, what I would probably consider males, following them around. Probably fertilizing eggs. The scientists that I've spoken to have told me that they spawn throughout the summer. And from my observations, I would agree with that. So I think our fish are spawning throughout the season.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Thank you.
Thank you.
Another hand. You're first.
Good afternoon, Commission. My name is Mike Wills. I'm a recreational angler from Virginia Beach. Just been cobia fishing for the last couple years. And I think we've all heard the expression, there's lies, there's damn lies, and then there's statistics. And one of the statistics I'd like to hear explained today that wasn't covered was, if there's been this big dramatic increase in the number of cobia caught in 2015 and the average size was anywhere from 20 to 40% larger than what had been caught the past couple years, how come we didn't see a big explosion in the number of citations that were registered? I think all the scientific models would say if, we caught four times as many fish and the average size was much bigger, we'd see that in the data. And it wasn't. I'm sure all of you have seen the citation data. And I think we know the answer is because the data is garbage that we're using to make the drastic change to this cobia fishery here. So in consideration of the new regulations being proposed for the cobia fishery and other species in Virginia, I'd just like to hope that this commission has the wisdom to refrain from implementing regulations like North Carolina just has and what the Mid-Atlantic Fisheries Marine Council has proposed for blue line tilefish. Segregating hook and line recreational fishermen in separate groups to restrict the number of days they can fish or the creel limits, I feel, is discriminatory and quite frankly unconstitutional. Just because there are a large number of private vessels, recreational vessels out there fishing, and the recreational fishermen probably catching more fish on an absolute basis than some of the other hook and line recreational fishermen, doesn't mean that individually, I'm catching more than anybody else out there. And actually, I'd probably argue to the contrary based on my little bit of success I have out there. So, I invest very heavily in my own equipment as opposed to going out and chartering a boat, but that doesn't mean I should be penalized by lower bag limits or being restricted to fishing only 2 or 3 days a week. I already have enough restrictions with my personal responsibilities and the weather and all that kind of stuff. So, if we institute some new limits on cobia, I just hope that this commission makes sure they're fair and balanced and the same for all recreational hook and line fishermen. And I thank you for your opportunity to come up here and speak with you today and share my concerns.
Thank you, Captain. Any questions from the commission? Thank you, sir. Another hand, you're first.
My name is Gary Caputi, and I'm here for the Recreational Fishing Alliance. First, I'd like to thank Commissioner Bull for my first opportunity to be a Virginia gentleman, because I drove here yesterday from New Jersey.
New Jersey.
To be at this meeting.
Welcome.
Yes. And it might give you an idea that this decisions you're making here today extend far beyond what's going on in Virginia. The Recreational Fishing Alliance is a political action group that represents recreational anglers nationwide. And we have a lot of members in Virginia, hence my presence here. And we also have a lot of members from outside of Virginia who enjoy your fisheries. I'd just like to hit a couple of high points. We presented a policy statement and our opinions as written. But probably boils down to the Recreational Fishing Alliance believes the closure is the direct result of the South Atlantic Council's failing to address management flaw in the Cobia Fishery Management Plan. In 2014, the South Atlantic Council adopted Amendment 20B to the Coastal Migratory Pelagic Resources in the Gulf of Mexico and the Atlantic Region Fishery Management Plan. The amendment revised the annual catch limits for cobia in response to the findings of CDAR 28. The stock assessment found that the Atlantic Migratory Group, which includes cobia from the Florida-Georgia line through New York, was not overfished or experiencing overfishing. The management flaw lies in the fact that Amendment 18 contains an accountability measure where in situations when the recreational and total annual catch limits are exceeded, it allows the annual catch limit to be compared over a range of years. However, when the annual catch limit is changed, as it was for 2015, the passage of Amendment 20B, the annual catch limit can only be compared to the first singular year. In this case, the first year is 2015, and since the recreational and total annual catch limits were exceeded, there are no other years available to average the landings. RFA believes the South Atlantic Council should have addressed this shortcoming of the plan when they adopted 20B in 2014. That said, RFA cannot support a closure of the recreational cobia fishery in federal or state waters and believes the recreational fishermen should not shoulder the burden of what's a management oversight. We do have some recommendations, but I think you've heard the recommendations from your local fishermen far better than what we would like to present, and we appreciate the opportunity for letting us participate in this proceeding. Thank you.
Thanks for making the drive all that distance from the Garden State. Any questions from the commission? Thank you, sir. Do I see another hand? There we go. Delayed reaction there.
My name is Chris DeMasi, captain of the charter captain. I'm also here representing Stephen Michaels from Boaters Warehouse, Ben Shepard, above average sport fishing, and Jimmy Losey, captain of Black Bart. To answer your spawning question, the University of Southern Mississippi did aquaculture. Cobia will spawn when the water temperature is 73.4 degrees with a 28% salinity every other week. I'm not going to go over data. I'm not doing anything like that. I'm here more to implore you guys to understand you guys are appointed by the governor, correct?
Yes.
So, and we elect the governor.
Let me rephrase. Everyone here has been appointed by a governor.
Okay.
A governor,
well, yeah.
Not necessarily current governor, except for Mr. Hull.
I got you. I just want to let you know that, you know, Virginia is a commonwealth. You know, the reason we stuck with commonwealth way back when was for the common welfare of the people. I don't have to go through the representation that we had down in the South Atlantic. I just want you to know that it's your responsibility to look after us. As elected or appointed members, it's your responsibility. The federal government doesn't care about Virginia citizens. You know, it's obvious if we're getting a five-week season, but yet we're 47% of the catch. Something's wrong there. And us as recreational and charter guys, we can't do anything. We rely on you guys to look out for our best interests. And that's pretty much what I had to say. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Please come forward.
My name is Lewis Brothers. I'm from Northern Neck, Virginia. I'm an avid recreational fish, not a charter captain, anything. I had a presentation to talk to you today, but about numbers and facts, I'm not going to bore you with that. Just going to leave you with one thought. It's about everything I had to say has already been said. But the one thing that I think is kind of shocking to me, and I hope you'll think about it when you vote, is the federal government has taken 1 year of statistics and is getting ready to impose on you a mandate to shut down commerce in the state. I hope you would take that very seriously. I don't know whether there are a lot of statistics that this has been done in a year's time without any more empirical data, but in my experience, I haven't heard very much about a fishery being closed with 1 year of data. And I think if you allow this to happen, you're going to accept it, and it's going to happen to you again and again and again. I think you should stand up and be counted. You've heard the statistics being questioned. You need to develop your own and then decide what you need to do and not let the federal government tear up your commerce. Thank you very much.
Any questions from the commission?
Thank you, sir.
Do I see another hand? Anybody else wish to speak? Mr. Below.
Could I ask someone to pull up the spawning stock biomass? An observation. My name is Wes Blow. I'm a recreational fisherman from Newport News, Virginia. I've fished for cobia about 12 years, about 20 times a year. I work. I'd like to fish more.
Don't we all?
I'd like to be fishing now. But they keep referring to the stock possibly being overfished, and that is from data from 2011, and you can see how it dropped down. Well, if you look back to 1986 or so, it spiked back up too. So in the last 4 or 5 years, I believe there's been a lot more fish out there. That's why I asked Congressman Rob Whitman to do another or ask for stock assessment. We have been seeing far more fish being caught. You know, Dr. Neal can tell you that, you know, years ago, if he went out there and caught one or two, that would be great. You know, the last few years, we've been catching 10, 12. I've caught 15 fish in a day. So I certainly believe there's more fish out there. And these accountability numbers and ACLs would be higher with the new stock assessment if it reflected that. I'm going to kind of bounce around here because I made some notes as people were speaking. Staff's fear of upsetting Virginia and South Carolina if we do something that will shorten their season next year, I wouldn't have that fear. They were asked to help us this year and refused to help us to extend our season. So for Mr. O'Reilly and staff to fear their them having a problem with that, I just think that's unfounded. You know, what's fair is fair. They didn't help us, so why should we just shut down our season to help them next year? Because Georgia and South Carolina's fishing is mostly in federal waters. Michelle Duvall is a person that I have spoke with many times, talked to, text with, emailed, and she has stood up for Virginia in a lot of the meetings. But one thing that I would note, and I did bring this up with Mr. O'Reilly, that she is employed by the state of North Carolina. So most of her interest is going to be in helping them, I believe. But, I mean, she has been a wonderful person for me to talk to, but she does have other interests. What I would like to see happen is the council not shut down the season for Virginia's state waters after June 20th. I have sent all of y'all a proposal, you know, before, and at the very minimum, I would like to see us get our fair share, because that's been my whole problem with this process. You know, I do want to see the fish protected, but with Virginia only getting 120,000 pounds of that 500,000 pounds, it's just completely unfair. You know, I could be okay with catch and release all year. I'm fine with that. But I'm not fine with being cheated and bearing the burden of the whole, the majority of it. You know, where North Carolina gets almost 360 pounds of fish to catch out of that 500,000, they were almost equally for the overage this year. So I would ask y'all to do something to extend Virginia season past that June 20th, either by going by the way that I had calculated and Michael Larkin figured up, you know, putting it out through the middle of July, if we were to get our fair share of the fish, and that's all I want. If we went to a more restrictive, you know, measurements on the fish as far as longer fish and fewer fish per boat, it could even be longer, but we would still fish to our fair share. As far as the gaffing, I brought that up last meeting. I brought that up because if we do go to a boat limit, and you know, I would fear there would be more discarded fish. I chum for fish. I anchor up and chum for them. And unfortunately, I know I have witnessed small fish being gaffed, you know, by other boats. And what happened to those fish after they were out of sight, I don't know. But I can assure you that that happens. So I would hate to see that happen more. And that could happen more with restrictions. The gentleman from Reedville, Bob Reed, he said something very alarming that I wasn't aware of. He said that the Maryland boats came down and were catching 10 to 20 fish per day.
Yes, sir.
We need a boat limit. That's just unacceptable. I mean, you know, so please look out for us and do what you can.
Any questions from the commission?
How many tagging awards have you won?
I asked George. I haven't, but came in like second last year. I've been tagging with Susanna for many years. As you know, I do a lot of other stuff. We've done deep drop stuff and all, tagging there and releasing togs and stuff. But I am very, conservative. You know,
and you started providing genetic samples last year.
I do genetic samples.
And we started pop-up tags this summer.
Yep, we started for Hamish Small, Dr. Hamish Small for cobia tags. I just turned in my tog, you know, samples this year. So we do as much as we can. Thank you,
Mr. Budd. Let me ask a question here, because you did kind of imply that there seemed to be plenty of fish out there, and the catch rates seem to bear that out. Do you think that's because there's plenty of fish? And this is really just kind of a devil's advocate question. Or do you think that we've become a little bit more efficient at them? This fishery has kind of transformed in recent years from a predominantly chum fishery to a tower sight casting fishery, well, which is pretty efficient. Could that explain what you're seeing here with an increase in catch opportunities?
In my opinion, no. I'm a chum fisherman. I fish off of a chum pot. When I first started fishing, you know, two or three fish per trip would be phenomenal. You know, in the last 2 years, I have probably averaged 6 to 8. I've had trips with 10 to 15 fish. So there are more fish. The tagging data has gone up. Susanna sent me some information there. 2012 was the highest year. But if you look at 13, 14, and 15, all of those years have increased too. So there's more fish out there. And we couldn't have been able to catch 1.5 million pounds if there was less fish. That came up in a FMAC meeting from one of the gentlemen. He said, well, you know, there's got to be a lot more fish there if you're catching that many more.
Mr. Frantz.
Yeah, I'd like to ask your opinion of something that was stated earlier. The fish
7 years, the last 4 years we have not had a fish over 100 pounds. Four to 7 years prior to that, we had four fish that were over 100 pounds. Last year, the last 3 or 4 years, we've only had about 8 or 9 fish in that 90-pound class range. 4 to 7 years back, we had about 15 pounds. So the reason for the boat limit and only one fish over 50 inches is to allow some of those fish to grow bigger because they're being targeted. So there are far fewer. Now, if you look at that same tagging data for last year, the 50-pound fish was 50 and 60-pound fish was dramatically up too. So that's where you got the higher average of fish, I think. You didn't get it from the bigger fish, but there were far more 50-pound fish caught, which is alarming. If we're killing all those, they're not going to get to 70, 80, and 90-pound fish.
Oh, what is the size of a citation for COVID?
55 pounds, 50 inches release.
Any other questions from the commission? Thank you, Mr. Bluff. I saw your hand as well.